morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about Northwestern Energy, Indian Health Services report on the agency's response to a former doctor's abuse of patients, and updates on coronavirus. It's Wednesday, March 18th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Montana inspectors yesterday intercepted a boat carrying invasive mussels at a recently opened check station on Interstate 15. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks says the boat owner was headed north to British Columbia and hadn't launched the watercraft in state. It's the first interception of the season. The mussels were found on the motor, dried up and dead. Inspectors weren't able to follow protocol and do a hot water decontamination because of freezing temperatures. Instead, they locked the boat to the trailer and alerted Canadian officials, who will follow up with their own inspection. FWP has been on high alert for invasive zebra and quagga mussels since their first in-state detection at Tiber Reservoir in 2016. The freshwater invaders can have devastating impacts on lakeside economies, hydropower and irrigation systems, and sense of place. This season's first mussel find comes a month earlier than last year. Montana utility regulators say they need more information from Northwestern Energy before considering the company's request to buy an additional share in the Colstrip coal-fired power plant. Kayla DeRoche reports the Public Service Commission voted yesterday to pause the process until Northwestern provides further details.
PSC staff says there are a number of issues with Northwestern Energy's February application to buy an extra 25% share in Colstrip Unit 4, primarily lack of information. Commissioner Roger Koopman agreed with the staff's assessment.
One of the things that really jumps out is the potential risks to the ratepayer in this case, and so many unanswered questions.
Staff said the application failed to delve into Unit 4's possible closure in coming years, the effect of energy policies in other states, and risks to plant owners and ratepayers. Staff also said Northwestern neglected to evaluate a full range of resource alternatives like solar and wind. Northwestern said late last week its application to buy more of Colstrip met state regulation requirements. PSC commissioners agreed with their staff's recommendation to put the process on hold until Northwestern could provide more information. The decision comes after comments from the Montana Consumer Council, the Montana Environmental Center, and the Colstrip Energy Limited Partnership pushing for a disclosure on Northwestern's plans and potential impacts. Northwestern has 30 days to respond. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
After receiving pressure from congressional lawmakers, the Indian Health Service is providing some members of the U.S. Senate Indian Affairs Committee a redacted report on the agency's response to a former doctor's abuse of patients in Montana and South Dakota. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports the document released this week details failed oversight over former Dr. Stanley Patrick Weber as he abused young Native American boys.
Last month, members of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee took issue with IHS's refusal to release a quality assurance review it contracted a third party to conduct. IHS says the report is meant to outline any of its failures to prevent and stop Weber's abuse. IHS announced this week it sent the chair and vice chair of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee redacted versions of the report. Chairman Senator John Hoeven of North Dakota said in a statement that he's still calling for a summary of the report to be publicly released. Both Montana Senator Steve Daines and John Tester sit on the committee. In an interview last month, Tester said the release of the report was key to the committee's oversight, and he was calling for a hearing with IHS Director Michael Wiocki to determine whether the steps IHS is taking to prevent future abuse are adequate.
But if it's not adequate, we can ask them if they're going to do more. And if they say no, then we can influence them by legislation or language and appropriations bills. There's a number of ways to do it.
No such hearing has been scheduled. Senator Daines has also called for the full report to be released. IHS issued a press release Monday saying it's put in place new policies on child sexual abuse reporting and prevention. A separate report from the U.S. Inspector General said IHS's new policies still fall short. IHS said it's expanding its general approach on preventing abuse and also said it's rolling out a new tracking system for abuse reports. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Montana driver's licenses expiring in March, April, or May of this year will have a 90-day extended renewal deadline. Montana Governor Steve Bullock announced yesterday afternoon that he'd sign an executive order allowing for the extension. Attorney General Tim Fox said yesterday the order was needed in response to the novel coronavirus.
The goal is to limit the need for visits to MVD stations during the COVID-19 outbreak.
Fox announced yesterday that effective today, driver's tests will be suspended in order to create more social distancing. The Motor Vehicle Division also sent out a reminder yesterday that vehicle registration can be renewed online, thereby avoiding in-person interaction at a county treasurer's office. The novel coronavirus outbreak made for a Montana St. Patrick's Day like few others in state history. Several counties this week instituted aggressive steps to reduce large gatherings in the name of public health. As Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports, Montanans adjusted their expectations this year and dialed it back a notch.
As Butte's St. Patrick's Day parade goes, apparently so goes the M&M Bar and Cafe. This year's legendary parade was canceled due to concerns of the new coronavirus. Coincidentally, the first time that's happened since the 1918 flu pandemic. The M&M's doors were also locked tight. The bar originally opened in 1890 and until the early 2000s was known for a century-long stretch of never closing its doors. Owner Selena Pankovich posted on the bar's Facebook page Monday that the decision to close was not easy and will have a huge financial impact on her business. Pankovich added that, quote, "I'm worried about my hometown, our elderly population, my family and friends, my M&M family and their families, and our healthcare system," end quote. The bar and cafe is a St. Patty's fixture in Butte, where Irish roots run deep. About 120 miles northwest of the mining city, the holiday was just as muted.
Like everyone else, we're having to break it down hour by hour and day by day.
That's Josh Martell, general manager of Missoula's Tamarack Brewing Company, which can now only offer customers curbside pickup service. Sit-down dining inside is currently off-limits.
In our location, we don't have designated curbside parking, so we're just instructing people to give us a shout when they get here, tell us what they're driving, and slow down to 20 miles an hour and roll the window down and we'll throw it in.
Martell's kidding around, but to keep the transaction speedy, the Tamarack's grab-and-go customers are encouraged to pay in advance when they call in their order. Back in Butte, M&M owner Selena Pankovich noted on Facebook that, quote, "There's never been a better time to live and breathe our motto. We are Butte tough." She encourages everyone to support local businesses whenever possible during this emerging health crisis, saying, quote, "We're going to need you in order to get back on our feet," end quote. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
Public schools in Montana are closed because of concerns over the novel coronavirus, but new data released this week gives a clearer picture of just how much it costs to educate each student in the state. The new data are part of the state's rollout of the federal replacement for No Child Left Behind. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
It costs an average of around $10,500 to educate each student in Montana's public school system last year. But those costs can look very different depending on a specific district or school. Schools and districts are now required to publish annual report cards on student achievement that include per-pupil cost breakdowns. Dylan Klapmeyer is the Director of Communications and Federal Relations at the Montana Office of Public Instruction.
The purpose of the report cards overall is transparency.
The report cards are required under the Obama administration's 2015 Every Student Succeeds Act, a massive federal education law that replaced the Bush Jr. era's No Child Left Behind. The 2018-2019 school year data give the public its first look at the cost per student breakdown in Montana by state, district, and school. Klotmeyer says this is a challenging time for schools.
We want school leaders and families to be focused on their health and safety right now. But, you know, at the end of the day, when we all come through this and the school doors open back up, we do hope that families and community members will take a look at these report cards and, you know, use it as a way to engage in community conversations around education.
There's more than 147,000 students enrolled in Montana's public K-12 schools. I'm Corin Cates-Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Health officers are saying communities need to be prepared for a potentially long-haul disruption of day-to-day life in response to COVID-19. Rachel Kramer reports community volunteers in Bozeman are trying to make life a little easier for their neighbors.
Health Officer Matt Kelly with the Gallatin City County Health Department said during times of stress and perceived crisis, people need to act with compassion.
If you know someone affected, send them a text or an email, or give them a call. Ask them if they are doing okay, and consider dropping off supplies or food, but only if you can do that without face-to-face contact.
Several community groups in Gallatin County are collecting donations, setting up meal deliveries, and matchmaking volunteers. Jeffrey Strock and Yimei Shao recently organized Bozeman Mutual Aid, an online forum to match people who are elderly, immunocompromised, or already sick with volunteers who can help deliver groceries or other supplies. Volunteers will drop off items outside of residences in an effort to reduce exposure. Strock says they've had 140 volunteers sign up and 10 requests for aid since Saturday. He says some of the requests have been for diapers and baby wipes, but most are financial.
We don't have a community fund set up quite yet, so we're not quite able to help that. And like, it really hurts to scroll through all of the requests that we can't help with. But there's been a few with what we had in mind originally. It's like, hey, can we get supplies?
Strock says once they have a community fund set up, they'll be able to provide some financial support to people who are concerned about lost income if they stay home. He says people can send an email to bozeman.mutual.aid@gmail.com with financial support as the subject line. Strock says they also hope to use the community fund to reimburse volunteers for transportation costs when picking up and delivering supplies. Strock and Chow are also considering ways to work with artists who aren't able to perform right now to live stream entertainment.
The scope is a lot grander than what I initially signed up for, but I'm really happy to try to facilitate this and get it a little more organized and hopefully help a lot more people.
Strock says they're in the process of reaching out to other community networks to identify and contact those who may be in need. Elsewhere, the Gallatin Valley Food Bank has transitioned to drive-through service. Healthy volunteers can sign up to prepare emergency food boxes on HRDC and Greater Gallatin United Way's websites. With the Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
A day after declaring a state of emergency in Yellowstone County, local government leaders are asking businesses, schools, and other groups to document financial impacts of the novel coronavirus. Nikki Ouellette reports county officials say this information could attract federal relief money toward the county.
Yellowstone County Disaster and Emergency Services Coordinator Casey Williams says he needs businesses, schools, and event organizers to document the names and dates of impacted events, along with the extent to which they had to change their plans as a result of following federal guidelines or government-ordered closures.
This is a nationwide declaration of emergency. We are competing, if you will, with every community in the United States. So the better we document the impact that this has on us, the higher up we go on the list for potential resources.
Williams asked planners to file information for each event, school, or facility impacted. He says President Donald Trump's federal declaration of emergency opens up federal relief funds. But Williams says the country hasn't faced a nationwide disaster like the coronavirus before. He says some laws may have to change in order for states, counties, and local governments to recoup money lost because of their response to the virus. He says right now there's no guidance for how bars or restaurants forced to close could receive federal aid. The Billings-based Big Sky Economic Development is also gathering data about the coronavirus's financial impacts. They plan to send it to state leaders. Steve Arviscow asks small business owners to fill out the one-page economic injury worksheet to help his organization establish overall impacts.
There will be a time when all of us in our community will need to show up and support our small business community. I can't tell you when that appropriate time is for all of us to reengage that way, but they will need us to show up.
On Tuesday, the U.S. Small Business Administration expanded eligibility for federal disaster relief loans to all Montana counties, effective immediately. Businesses can now apply for up to $2 million in 30-year loans with a 3.75% interest rate. The loans can cover fixed debts, payroll, accounts payable, and other bills. Yellowstone County's Health Department on Monday joined others across the state and issued a week-long closure for bars and eateries as part of an effort to limit crowd sizes in accordance with guidance from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention. The full impact of that order, along with voluntary cancellations and postponements, hasn't been added up yet. In Billings, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
With Montana News, I'm Corin Cates Carney.
And I'm Nikki Ouellette. Corin, the ripple effects of the coronavirus finally hitting Montana, it's a news cycle that's moving so fast that sometimes the landscape shifts between when we record a story and when we put it on the air.
Yeah, it's all moving really fast. The first positive case of the COVID-19 illness in Montana appeared 5 days ago. Since then, public schools have closed, bars and restaurants in some of Montana's largest counties have been ordered to shut down, and health officials are asking everyone to take a step back from social life. Just as we were sitting down to record this at 9:15 Tuesday night, we learned that there was another new case in Gallatin County. It's the county's second and Montana's ninth in-state case.
This one was a little unusual the way it was announced. The announcement came from the Gallatin City County Health Department. They say this is the second case for the county, a man in his 20s. He was tested on March 13th, and the results came back on March 17th. County officials say that he self-isolated after he came back from a trip to Europe, and that that may have saved many more potential contacts and exposures from occurring. There'll be a press conference later on today to share more details. Usually these announcements come straight from the governor's office, so this is a change.
And before this new case, yesterday evening, Governor Steve Bullock, he's been holding just about daily press conferences since there was the first grouping of cases announced in Montana. And on Tuesday night, he announced that uninsured Montanans will be eligible to receive coverage for COVID-19 testing and treatment.
We want to make sure that anyone that is symptomatic has the opportunity to test, especially if those without insurance aren't getting tests because of the fear of those costs. We wanted to address it.
This is actually a pretty big deal. About 6% of Montanans are not insured at all, and that is a really big barrier for people seeking care in the first place. So Bullock says that under the emergency declaration that he issued last week, he's going to be dipping into state Medicaid funds and potentially some federal money to cover these uninsured COVID patients. People who have private insurance through the four major health insurance companies in Montana, those companies waived co-pays and deductibles for coronavirus testing last week.
And testing still isn't available to everyone who wants a test. You have to get a medical provider's order to get one. How are you seeing this kind of process for testing working out?
Everyone is saying call ahead if you're experiencing any symptoms like a fever, cough, shortness of breath, and most importantly, if you have a recent exposure to a known COVID case or if you've had recent travel to known hotspots. In Billings, there are two major hospitals. They are working with the county health department and are, as a group, they're hoping to stand up a centralized testing site at Metro Park. Details are still forthcoming on that. In the interim, each hospital has kind of taken its own approach to how they're doing coronavirus testing. They're each seeing between 75 and 100 patients a day for it right now. At Billings Clinic, they've just taken over a unit and they've kind of built up some isolation and containment measures. So there's a single entrance point for anyone who might be a potential COVID case. When you go in, you answer a questionnaire, your temperature is taken, and they triage you based on your symptoms. And employees who work in that wing are kind of all contained there with personal protective equipment like masks and gloves.
at St. Vincent Healthcare, they've set up one of these drive-through testing sites like we've kind of seen. There's some in Wyoming. California is using this. And this way, the patient never even leaves their own vehicle.
I think I've seen a video of that online. It looks kind of like a drive-through. You're pulling up for fast food and they go and just kind of swab you and you drive off.
Yeah, it's basically that. The big thing is to call ahead. Hospital officials are saying don't overwhelm emergency departments. If you just have a question, call ahead.
I think one of the big questions people have is whether the hospitals have what they need to see a mass influx of patients. That's what public health experts are saying will happen if we don't flatten the curve, is the phrase being used a lot, which means spread the rate of infection out.
Right. So if you spread it out over time, not everyone is seeking care at the exact same time, and everyone is more likely to receive the level of care that they need. So the two hospitals here in Billings say that they're prepared, but if a significant proportion of the county got sick all at the same time, they probably wouldn't be. Dr. Scott Elner, the CEO of Billings Clinic, was speaking at a press conference yesterday. He said they saw 92 people in their containment unit for COVID yesterday. And most of those tests have already come back negative, and everybody else has been sent home with a note to just self-isolate for a bit. As for surge capacity, they say they have 78 intensive care unit beds ready for a surge. They think that they've got the ability to move things around so that they could handle 120% of their normal capacity. So that's 50 or 60 extra patients. They're also postponing or canceling any elective or scheduled procedures until kind of the big crush of coronavirus cases have passed. And Billings Clinic is also in touch with its rural partners, those critical access hospitals, sharing personnel, sharing protective equipment. Over at St. Vincent Healthcare, Dr. Michael Bush says we've been given this huge gift in Montana of time. We are behind the curve, and we have the ability to just look at what other cities like Seattle or Denver, how are they handling this and what can we learn from them? They are monitoring equipment like masks. They're figuring out how to redeploy their staff in case a surge does occur. And they've got plans in place of how to expand their intensive care units and their ventilator capacity, which is one of the key pieces of equipment to help folks out who have the COVID-19 illness. Even with all of these plans in place, Yellowstone County could still feel a real crush, says Dr. Bush.
Our healthcare capacity in Yellowstone County, while it is really great, it's one of the really strong healthcare centers in the United States, it is still limited. And if we get overwhelmed, we're not going to be able to take care of all of our patients. And at the same time, we have to realize that this is not just about COVID. It's about our trauma patients, about our heart patients, it's about the oncology patients, and the older person that gets sick with a urinary tract infection. So all of these things have to play into this as we look at it.
Dr. Bush also said that the county is really low on blood at the moment. So if you're able, go donate.
And what are they saying about staffing levels? There's the equipment question, but what about staff?
Yeah, I asked about nurses. Nurses are doing a lot of the legwork, tracking down who the positive COVID cases have come into contact with and then checking in on people who are at home in isolation. Our county health department here in Yellowstone County, it's called Riverstone. They say they're moving people around internally and they're doing okay. Billings Clinic says they're also moving some people around. They've moved surgical nurses to help in other areas, for example. And then Dr. Bush over at St. Vincent, he says they're getting a little creative.
But as we walked out of the 30th Street exit today, the person manning the desk there screening visitors coming in was one of the people who work in our finance department. So they've been repurposed to sitting at a desk taking temperatures using our personnel in creative ways to meet the current needs. So.
A little levity, that's nice. One thing health departments are doing to keep that infection rate low is they're closing down places where people usually like to meet up.
Yeah, so counties have closed down bars, coffee shops, restaurants, casinos. All the biggest counties in the state have done that. It's been kind of similar to the way that school closures were rolled out. At least in Yellowstone County, the decision seems like it was made pretty quickly with not a lot of heads up given directly to businesses. On Tuesday, some smaller counties started jumping on that bandwagon. For example, Carbon County shut down bars, all the other places for a week. And then Flathead County is now warning businesses to prep for that. There's not going to be a warning when control measures are instituted, but they said, you know, it's kind of on the horizon.
I stopped by a bar, a place where you can get some food in Missoula around dinner time yesterday. And when I walked in, there were a couple of guys standing next to the kitchen entrance, just kind of chatting. They work there. And it sounded like they weren't seeing a lot of business in the takeout orders that are still allowed at some of these bars and restaurants. And it didn't seem like they had enough business to keep them open for very long. What are you seeing for how businesses are handling this kind of impact?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. Some businesses are paying employees to stay at home. Some are keeping employees on and still offering food service through delivery or pickup. Some are keeping them on to secure the building. They're acting as security. And then some are letting their workers find interim work elsewhere. There is unemployment insurance available now to anyone who is impacted by COVID-19 closures. That includes if your place of business has been shut down by some kind of government ban or lack of business. If you are in quarantine and you expect to return to work, or anyone who's staying home to care for someone with COVID-19, all of those things are now covered by unemployment insurance.
And what are you hearing from employers and workers?
Again, kind of a mixed bag. There's a lot of we're all in this together kind of messaging, and that mentality of keeping my community safe. This is me making a sacrifice to do that. At a Yellowstone County press conference on Tuesday, a handful of casino owners and workers showed up, and they said this is actually a huge burden on their employees, many of whom in the service industry are living paycheck to paycheck. They raised concerns. They're worried that they might lose employees and have a hard time staffing back up once these closures are lifted. They're curious what this will do to supply chains. They say unemployment won't even come close to what a server makes in a night's worth of tips. And then they also feel like their industry is being singled out. This is Jody McKinnon, manager at the Reno Club.
I think there's a lot of businesses out there, the Costcos, the salons, things like that, where people are gathering that are able to stay in business, and those people are able to make money, whereas I feel us as an industry are being targeted a little bit.
McKinnon and the other casino workers I talked with said they're all expecting this to go on longer than a week, and they're kind of hoping their lobbyist can work with the health department to find some kind of middle ground that's between being fully open for business and a full-on closure. On the other side of this, John Felton, who heads up Yellowstone County's health department, he's the one that made the call. He says he's acutely aware of how difficult these closures are. He wants things to go back to normal and open up as soon as possible. But he also says these decisions were made to help flatten out that curve and keep the community safe.
We started out this conversation by saying, you know, things are changing really fast. What should people do to learn more?
I personally am looking at the Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services website. They're the ones with the most up-to-date number of in-state cases. And then I'm checking in with county health departments. They are the ones notifying you of what's open. A lot of stuff still is open. A lot of stuff is moving online, too. But the county health department is probably going to have the most accurate local information for folks. And then, you know, personally, the CDC is strongly recommending to keep crowd sizes to 50, and it might be even lower in the future. They're suggesting to widen your personal bubble to 6 feet and just frequently washing your hands to the tune of Happy Birthday, sung twice.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.